Leadership isn't just about strategy. It's about connection. And that's what we explore here on the Tactical Empathy Podcast. I also explore it every week in my newsletter, The E in the Room. With more than 1,000 subscribers already learning how to communicate with confidence and lead with empathy, this is your chance to join in. Head on over to www.erinthorp.ca/resources right now and download a series of free leadership tools and get the newsletter delivered to your inbox. The conversation doesn't end here on the podcast, so make sure you're a part of it. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Tactical Empathy. Today I am joined by Yvonne Heath, and I'm incredibly excited to bring her to the show for you. Yvonne has a 27-year nursing career and in the last decade or so has completely transitioned her career to help people navigate mainly transitions, but also grief. And she started the Just Show Up movement. She's got a TED Talk. She's incredibly passionate and compassionate about this topic. And recently launched her newest book, which is the story of her navigating addiction with her eldest son. And so I'm really excited to have her on the show, and I can't wait to invite you into this conversation. Hey, Yvonne, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Erin. Great to be here.
Oh, I'm so excited for our conversation today. I know you've listened to a few past episodes, and as you know, our podcast focuses on leadership and empathy. And last summer we did a series on grief, and it's been an interesting, I'll say, topic for sure. I find it's coming up more and more in different areas of my work and the people that I'm talking to. So I'm really excited for our conversation today. I'm excited to dive a little deeper into this. So one of the things I believe is that we're all leaders in all aspects of our lives, right? We lead ourselves first, then maybe you have a family or a community or a friend group, or maybe you do lead a business or a team or something like that. But I'd love to hear kind of what your quote unquote leadership journey has been so far, in your life. And you can answer that question any way that feels aligned for you this morning.
Yes, it's such a great question. And there's so many different things to consider. And it's funny because a lot of the time we are pointing fingers at the leader, the manager, you know, they need to do something and we need to change. And I believe that you're just so right. We are all leaders. And if we take the reins of our own lives and say, now, wait a minute, you know, this isn't about my title. This isn't about, we are all leaders. And so to acknowledge that and take responsibility for your role instead of the blame, the shame, the, you know, they need to do better. Well, we need to do better. We all need to do better. And so it's been, you know, my career for 27 years was a registered nurse. And sadly, in healthcare, in many fields, there's a lot of blame and shame, and our managers need to do better. And so it's always a yes and, isn't it? Yes and, they need to do better, and so do we. And so do we. Yeah. So I truly took that to heart and took responsibility, because I realized that as a nurse, as a mother, as a community member, I was creating a lot of my own excessive suffering. Because nobody can do it for us, right? Nobody can make us happy. Nobody can be in our mind and know what is missing in our lives, especially when we're all pretending we're fine when we're not.
Right? Yeah, I'm good. Everything's fine.
Yeah. Everything's fine. Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So registered nurse, then what? What are you still practicing? Like what's current and now for you?
It's so funny because nurse for 27 years, and I worked in many departments, like emergency, chemotherapy, hospice, palliative care, intensive care. I was a traveling nurse. I worked in the United States. I worked in 10 or 11 different places. And I realized I couldn't settle anywhere, but I didn't realize I was gathering information for the second act of my life. At the time, I had no idea. What I realized in all of that, there's a common thread that we as a society are very ill-prepared for grief, transitions, end of life, challenges, crisis. We are reactive, not proactive, right? We wait till we're in it, and then we're like, oh my gosh, I have no idea how to manage this, how to handle this. We do not think proactively. And so in nursing, I was, again, moving from place to place, from department to department. And I didn't even realize it was slowly chipping away at my soul, because when you talk about empathy, I was in empathy overload. I took on everybody's pain and why is this happening? But we were still not having real conversations. So fast forward to, you know, I've had much grief, the hard times in my life, as everyone has. I've had divorce and miscarriages and all kinds of challenges. And then I married my soulmate and, you know, life was great. And I had twins at 40. And I had my older son. I said we were a package deal, and we became the Heath family five, this family of five. And I thought life is so great until it wasn't. And our older son went down a road of drugs and addiction after having tremendous grief in his life. He wrecked his knee. His snowboarding dreams were crushed. Mm. And that's when I realized in healthcare, people were avoiding us because they didn't know what to do or say.
Right.
Right. And I thought, what's wrong with this picture? Where are my people? Where's my empathetic community?
Yeah.
And I realized I had to, again, become my own leader and say, what is wrong with this picture? What is missing? And so I left my nursing career. I wrote a book called Love Your Life to Death about our death phobic society and our grief phobic society. I interviewed people ages 11 to 101. And it literally changed the trajectory of my life. And as you, I'm sure, will agree, it is in sharing our stories that we heal ourselves and each other. I was no longer willing to pretend I was fine when I wasn't.
So
I am now an author, speaker, and compassionate disruptor, as I like to coin myself. And
oh, I love it.
Right? And, you know, there's no more blame. There's no blame. There's no shame. There's no pointing fingers. It's like, what can I do? What can I do?
Yeah, I really, a couple of things that stood out for me in your story. I think there's, and it was a big impetus to like starting these conversations for this podcast, was I think there is, I always describe it as a bit of a spectrum. And on one hand, we have the sort of overgivers, the people that are the empaths or identify as that and just give to the point where then they're like wiped out. And then we have the people over here that are like, I don't do emotion, right?
Nope.
We're just going to keep that all bottled up and there's nothing to talk about and everything's fine. Yep. And neither works, right? Mm-hmm. Neither works. And so the whole idea behind the show and the work that I'm doing is like, how do we get people to the middle, right? Where we can walk beside people, be beside people, not take it on, know what to say. Because we see a lot of that. You know, your description of like, where are my people when your son is going through this in the healthcare? We see that in corporate as well. Wow. Like I saw that all the time too. It's like, hey, I'm dealing with something really heavy. And it's like, oof, nobody wants to talk about it. You know, nobody knows what to say. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows how to sit with you in an emotionally difficult time, not take it on, not try to fix it, mm-hmm. and just be there. And so that's why we're here today. I love it.
I love it so much. I love these conversations because we complicate everything, right? We humans, we complicate everything. And we also want a quick fix, but we don't want it to be complicated. And I mean, there's one question to ask people. How do we get good at anything? We practice. And so when you say like people don't know how to just show up, they don't know what to do, they don't know what to say, why would they?
Yeah. Like we don't practice it.
Where do we practice? Where do we have these conversations? Where are we willing to say, I don't know what to do, I don't know what to say? And where are we saying, oh my gosh, this is so uncomfortable. We don't want to be uncomfortable. No. And I love like people with, whenever I'm doing a workshop, I always get people, how do I get comfortable with this? And I'm like, oh, you sweet little soul.
Right.
Let's be okay with being uncomfortable. It's absolutely uncomfortable. I have been immersed in this teaching myself because, you know, with the secret is to teach what you need to learn.
Yes. And,
right. That is what I am doing. Yep. I needed to learn this. So I just dove in and be willing to learn, unlearn, and evolve and ask the questions and say, you know, I always tell people I have superpowers. Number one, I'm okay with being a hot mess. Mm-hmm. Number two, if I don't know, I'm going to ask.
Yeah.
So when people say, I don't know what to do, I don't know what to say, I say, write this down. Ask.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say. I'm here.
Yeah. And sometimes that's all that needs to be said, right? Is I don't know what to do, but I, as you said, keep showing up.
Just show up, right? That's what I say. When you don't know what to do, you don't know what to say, just show up.
Show up.
And be a hot mess and be okay. When I was interviewing people for my first book, I literally heard those phrases. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say. Over and over. So we avoid because we're afraid to do or say the wrong thing. And what I'm helping people to understand is it is always better to do or say something than to do or say nothing. And if you get it wrong, if you just show up and say the wrong thing, allow your heart, humor, and humanness, say, wow, I wanted to say something brilliant. That wasn't it. I'm sorry. I wish I would. And I've done it. I've still to this day, I'll say something and then I'll just look and say, oh, no, I was thinking it was going to come out. It was going to be so brilliant. And I tripped over all my words and that's not what I wanted to say. And, you know, it's interesting because when you talk about like leadership and why it's hard for people to be empathetic, elephant in the room, it's there even though it's hiding. We've normalized a lot of the wrong thing. We have normalized. So women in leadership, you don't want to look emotional. You don't want to be too soft because then people aren't going to think you're a strong leader. Well, I have friends in the C-suite that say, you know what? That was a really challenging thing for this person. And they need a minute. And I think, wow, to me, that's beautiful leadership and shows tremendous strength and courage in the face of, oh, are you going to be an emotional woman? And say, yes, I am. Of course, this person's loved one died. Yes, this is very sad. Right? Now, the other thing is I have to say, we talk about toxic masculinity and not wanting men to be toxic. However, where is it safe for a big, tough guy to have a really good cry with his friends and he's going to be supported? Where would that happen?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And it needs to happen. Right?
Yes.
It needs to happen. Yeah. I remember, and I've shared on the podcast before, you know, I used to think that, because I kind of grew up professionally in the construction world and, you know, I was very emotionally expressive, mainly because I avoided it for so long that it just had to come out. But I remember people saying like, you're so emotional. But then I would look around and it was like, yeah, but you guys are like throwing stuff and punching things. And like, I'm pretty sure that's emotional too. Right. Like, but it took me a few years to kind of connect those dots and be like, whoa. And really, you know, we're all emotional. Human beings are emotional.
Absolutely.
We have emotions and that's a good thing. We need to get fairly comfortable with them. I think I know the answer to this question, but I just want to circle back here. Your sort of working definition of empathy, what is it?
I love that question also because we talk about sympathy, empathy, compassion, and we get it all mixed up. And I believe that empathy is, it's a wonderful skill, again, to be practiced, to be learned. And, you know, it's kind of like resilience. You have to build it. And I think it's that beautiful ability to put your own discomfort aside and try to sit with someone to just show up for them who are struggling. And it's interesting because we say, and try to understand. The truth is, even if we don't, to be able to sit with them and allow that space for their emotions, right? And a beautiful paramedic, when I was doing a training, shared a story. She had taken care of her husband for many, many years. And she said, you know, your 10 is your 10. It doesn't matter what you think. So when you are, the ability to be empathetic is to sit with someone and they are falling apart because their iguana died and you're not a fan of reptiles,
right?
You're going to put that aside and just say, oh, they're really hurting, and know that their 10 is their 10 and be able to sit with them and create that safe space non-judgmentally. And I love that your 10 is your 10. I don't have to understand.
Right. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. We don't have to make it right or wrong. We don't have to understand really. And I think that's what a lot of people maybe come into empathy with, you know, is like that I have to have walked in that shoes, or if I don't know, right, if I'm not a parent and somebody's lost a child, or if I haven't lost my parents yet, like how do I, right? Like all of those different situations, if we haven't experienced them, how am I supposed to go and understand? And it's not about that. It's about holding the space and showing up.
And you know, it's interesting about that because as I taught a grade 2 class, and they really got it, which I love so much when we talk about grief and mourning, you've got to get it out. You've got to get your feelings out, hug it out, cry it out. I say punch it out, pillows, not people. However, when we make assumptions or judgments like this person's mother died, oh my gosh, my mom died, it was the worst experience of my life, and so they must be falling apart. Now, what if they're not, because their mother was abusive and they haven't seen them in 30 years and it was elephant in the room of relief.
Yeah.
However, what if you lived on a farm and you had 20 dogs and you didn't even know their names and you found them kind of annoying, but to that person, their dog Benji was their whole life, their best friend, right? To me, that real empathy is being able to say, oh yeah, this is a 10 for you. Oh my gosh, I know what a 10 feels like. And see, that's the difference, right? Because when we, like people, I've had people say, well, I don't get it. I mean, it's just a cat. I'm like, do not say that to the cat people. Thank you very much. Yeah. I love my cats. My cats are Calvin and Hobbes. I love my cats, right?
Oh,
I'm a dog person. Well, that's okay. Then your 10 is your 10. And I think that's just a beautiful way to approach it. You don't have to agree or understand.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would love to sort of dive into how we might use empathy as a tool, particularly around the topic of addiction, because they think there are a lot of judgments and assumptions and, you know, probably people that understand it way too well and other people that don't understand it at all, right? How has empathy shown up for you as a tool navigating that journey in your life?
Yeah, big question, because as right over this shoulder is my book that has just recently in December 2025 came out, Addiction, Grief, and Joy. And it is about our journey with our son and his struggle with addiction, which I'm so grateful to him that he is open enough to allow me to share my perspective. And he's actually writing his book right now, which is super exciting. Beautiful. Yes. It's interesting because when I talk about the learning, unlearning, and evolving, when our journey with him started, and that was when he was 16, he's 32. We've been on this journey for a long time.
A while, yeah.
Right? Back then, what we were taught, you know, the whole just say no. If they do drugs, kick them out, and you only know what you know, right? Fast forward to people now where we understand more of harm reduction and, you know, where in our healthcare system do we not take care of people because of, even if addiction was a choice, where do we like, oh, I'm sorry, you're having a heart attack, but you eat fried food every day and you drink and you're smoking, so we're not going to treat you. We don't do right. this, right?
Yeah.
However, the empathy part had to come in for me because I was so angry at people's reactions for so long. They were avoiding me. And I had to come to my own place of understanding there's so much misinformation out there. And quite honestly, if I hadn't been forced into learning more, I don't know what I would think. Right. I don't know. However, I needed to understand more. And that's what I now when I see people and I still hear it. Oh, you know, they're making these decisions. I'm like, OK, so I invite you to explore that. And that's why I wrote my book. I'm helping people to understand as a parent, as someone who has I dove into this to understand. And so I do try to be empathetic and say, like, when they don't just show up, they don't know how. When people approach with these things, I send them love, not every time, and encourage them. And that's why I'm saying, here's some information. I invite you to explore this information. Because, again, I can only change me. And that's what I say, my PPE, be proactive, practice, and teach by example. All I can do is teach by example. And anyone who reads my book and they still think that addiction, you know, is a choice people are making, here is the information. And it is terrifying. And I understand, right? People are scared to death of death. Our society can't even handle when our seniors die, when people right. now we're certainly not going to be able to just show up for in addiction because it's terrifying. And I understand it's terrifying. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
In previous conversations we've had, you've mentioned sort of this concept of like recovering out loud and compassionate communities. I'd love to explore what that is and have you walk us through that.
I love that you're asking. These are the things that wake me up. Why does it always have to be 4 a.m.? I don't know. but compassionate communities, you know, that is that beautiful. It's been a movement. I've met Dr. Alan Kelleher, who started it in the UK, and it's about compassionate communities. And we have complicated, sanitized, medicalized, and professionalized everything. And to me, our greatest untapped resource is one another. There's never going to be enough professionals to take care of us 24/7, nor do we need professionals 24/7. We need our compassionate communities, our families, friends, neighbors, coworkers. We need to stop minding our own business and saying, oh, I don't want to interfere. I don't want to burden. Like, let's take responsibility for ourselves and each other. And so taking it a step further, when I say we need to create compassionate communities where we can recover out loud and from whatever we are facing and just show up for one another with heart, humor, and humanness, so that recovering could be from divorce, diagnosis, job loss, mental health issues, addiction, abuse, whatever we are recovering from. And keeping in mind that that person's 10 is their 10 and just showing up for one another. I hear all the time, oh, they're seeing a professional. So that's wonderful. I love professionals. And we need our compassionate communities, because when we're grieving or struggling, it's 24/7. We're going to see that therapist once a week for 6 weeks. So when people come back from a rehab for 30 days after they've struggled with addiction, if they're coming back to a community that has no idea what's going on because it's the dirty little secret, no one's talking about it, and your only community that's accepting you for how you are is your drug community, because no one else, you have to pretend with everybody else, and no one else is looking out for you. And, you know, when I say stop minding our own business, if someone is struggling, if you see something, say something or tell someone who can help. If you don't have that network and that compassionate community, how do you stay in recovery?
Yeah.
How do you stay in recovery?
Yeah, no, right? It's almost, I think it's pretty impossible,
it's
right?
It's pretty impossible. And people say, oh, it's up to their family. Well, like our Tyler lives in British Columbia.
Yeah.
We live in Ontario. I can call him every day of my life. He needs his compassionate recovery community.
Yeah.
Say, Ty, you're not just showing up for yourself. Ty, you're getting riled up.
Yeah.
Right? We need that. And whether it's, again, whether someone is struggling after diagnosis of cancer or their child is sick or whatever, or abuse, God, let's recover out loud. And I love when people say, oh, I don't want to make them uncomfortable. I want to make everyone uncomfortable. I'm going to make you uncomfortable. Get used to it. That's life. Sometimes life is uncomfortable.
Yeah. Well, and it's like you said before, right? How do we learn how to do anything? It's by practice. And the learning process is by nature uncomfortable, right? The first time you rode a bike, the first time you tried to bake a cake, like, I don't care. Take the very simple things. You screw it up, you mess it up, it doesn't work out. You fall, you scrape your knee, whatever. Like, there's some discomfort in the learning
course. Of course. Yeah. This is my favorite example is when I was in high school and college, I took a zero instead of speaking in front of my class.
Right.
I was not a public speaker. When I wrote my first book and someone said, if you want people to read your book, you're going to have to be a speaker. And I went like, that's a hard no. Yes. No, thank you. And it was like the attitude, like, no.
Mm-hmm.
From that, I almost cried the first time. I was like, I thought I was going to pass out. I was going to be sick, like the whole thing. And now I love it because I'm okay with being flawed, imperfect, and fabulous. And I'll probably cry on stage, and I'm okay with that. Yeah. I might forget where I was and say, what was I talking about? I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
Because this message is more important than my fear was, but no one could have ever convinced me, say 12 years ago, that I would have been a speaker. I would have laughed hysterically. I was a chemotherapy nurse. That was my life, you know, no. So we can learn, right? We can learn to do hard things, and it's okay to be uncomfortable, right? Absolutely. Be proactive, practice, and teach by example. And you know, the other thing about not when we don't just show up for someone, how does it make us feel? Boy, we carry that guilt. We carry that, I'm the worst person. They needed me. I didn't just show up. Oh, I'm terrible. I say, go say you're sorry and just show up and do better next time.
Yeah.
That's it.
I love it. I love it. I love this conversation. I'm excited to get my hands on your book and dive into that. For listeners who, one, want to find out more about you and the work you do and where you retail your books, where can we send them?
Everything.
We'll have all these links in the show notes, of course.
Yes, YvonneHeath.com, and they can find everything there, my TED Talk and everything. And anyone and everyone, they're welcome to reach out to me. I'm always up for a great conversation.
I love that. What is like one simple takeaway you want listeners to leave this episode with in terms of a practice or a reflection or a thought?
It's very simple. It doesn't matter what you've done in the past. You can start now, lean in. And when you don't know what to do, you don't know what to say, just show up and see how it feels.
Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you so much, Yvonne, for this conversation and for being here.
Thank you so much, Erin. I appreciate you.